Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I am fantastic, Carlos. The weather has finally gotten straightened out up here in our neck of the woods. We've had a couple really great weeks of weather. The golf courses are shaping up. It's a lot of fun to play right now. You know, we don't have a major to talk about this week, and the PGA Tour season one is winding down with just three tournaments remaining on the 2015 schedule. We can kind of take a deep breath this week while the men are at Firestone for the WGC Bridgestone and get ready for the PGA Championship next week at Whistling Straits. Rory's still out. Tiger may be getting better. We got a lot of stuff to cover, Carlos. Let's go.
We're going to be talking about those two guys specifically, too. And we have a VIG. His name is Jason Becker, the president of the PGA Tour Golf Membership Consultants. So you don't want to miss that. But we're going to start right away with the weekend backspin. And we had a major on the ladies there. As Imbi Park, Fred, hunted down Jin Young Ko in the final stretch there of the Women's British Open, it became clear which South Korean was the rookie and which was the player about to add another chapter in golf's record book. The top-ranked Park picked up seven shots in her last 12 holes, pressured her 20-year-old protege so much she finally lost her nerve and completed 7-under-65 at Turnberry to capture the trophy she thought she may never win. Park won by three shots on 12-under for a seventh major title, becoming just the seventh female to win four different majors after Louise Soggs, Mickey Wright, Pat Bradley, Julie Ingsters, Carrie Webb, and Annika Sorenstam. But how about ending the debate about clinching the so-called career Grand Slam? The LPGA Tour is calling Park's achievement just that. However, Park hasn't won the France-based Evian Championship since it was given the status of a fifth major in 2013. She did win it the year before, and the Evian is staged next month when Park can complete definitely what some are calling the Super Slam. But how about Ko? You know, she's just starting her golfing journey. She was playing her first major, her first tournament outside of Asia with a temporary locally born caddy giving her advice on every shot, and she was bidding to become the third first major winner from South Korea in the last five majors after Hyo Yoon came at the Evian last year and In Gi Cheon at the U.S. Women's Open last month. Park said she needed to produce her best display of putting in 2 years to overhaul Ko, who is the latest on a conveyor belt of talent coming from the South Korean Tour. She became the second youngest player to win the four traditional majors. Carrie Webb, when she was 26, she completed the hole in 2001. She also passed $12 million in career earnings with a winner's check of $450,000. And 18-year-old Lydia Ko, yes, that's the initial Ko. She was seeking to become the youngest major winner, trying to beat Morgan Pressel's record by 7 months. But she was three shots behind her namesake Ko, only to take two shots out of the greenside bunker at number 12 and make a double bogey. So she finished third with Soyeon Ryu, ensuring that three South Koreans finished in the top five, Fred. So Luna Subron was the most successful amateur. She finished T13 with an impressive 69 in the final round for the Spaniard, one of the lowest scores of the day. So how about Imbi Park?
Yeah, Carlos, you know, that's her sixth major title in the last 3 years. It was the seventh major victory of her career. If you don't count the Evian, which has only been a major for 2 years, where her best finish is a T10, it gives her a win in the four majors on the women's tour. The A&A Inspiration, formerly the Kraft Nabisco, two U.S. Women's Opens, and three women's PGA Championship titles, in addition to this women's British title. She solidified her hold on world number one, ahead of Lydia Ko and Stacey Lewis. She also clinched the Annika Award for the best performance in a major championship this year. You know, Michael Wan was on golf trying to sell this as a Grand Slam. Well, is it truly a Grand Slam? You know, it's an envy slam for sure. She could make it a slam dunk and put an end to all the arguments that she can somehow win the Evian next month in France. In my humble opinion, you can't have a slam unless you win them all. So there's five majors now in women's golf, so she's got to win all five to have a Grand Slam, I would think. But that's just me. Hey, some numbers for you. From 2010 to 2012, in that three-year stretch, she finished top 10 in nine of those 12 majors. There was only four those years, each one of those years. Since 2013, she has won six of 14 majors. That's pretty good numbers, man. We have seen dominant performances in golf over the years, but what Envy Park is doing right now on the LPGA Tour is one of the all-time best. Other players of note at the Ricoh Women's British Open, biggest loser, Michelle Wee. Had to withdraw after re-injuring her ankle at just 13 holes into her first round on Thursday. We may not see Michelle for a while as she rehabs. Will she be ready for the Evian and the Solheim Cup? Been a lost year for Wee after a fantastic 2014 season. Jin-Young Ko was in control on Sunday after front nine, 3-under par 33, including an eagle at number 7. But a bogey and double bogey on the back nine left her at 9-under par and three shots behind Envy. Ko is yet another talented young player from Korea. Lydia Ko and So-Yeon Ryu ended up tied for third at 8-under. After bogeys of 5 and 6, Ryu ran off six birdies in her last 12 holes to post a 4-under par 68. Lydia Ko had an uncharacteristic up-and-down round. One eagle, five birdies, two bogeys, a double bogey, and a partridge in a pear tree. But she kept grinding in the cold, windy, and wet conditions. Suzanne Pedersen was vying for her first women's British and third career major title, but a final round even par 72 with five bogeys and five birdies left her minus 7 for the tournament and five shots back apart. Turnberry showed well. Sir Donald showed up, but the LPGA Tour players avoided contact and would not talk about him. You know we have a lot to talk about Trump, but we'll save it for later in the Par 5 news. Five-time major champ. Yeah, well, you know, we always got to have our little Trump segment. Five-time major champ who has been lost the last couple of years, Yanni Tseng, had a solid week, finished 1-under par, T13. And, of course, weather is always an issue in Scotland, and this week was no different. Ilse Craig was not visible on several occasions in the wind blowing, the rain sideways, and stocking caps and winter coats were mandatory to get around the links. And as the Scots say, Carlos, nay wind, nay rain, nay golf. 'Twas a fine day for the golfs at Turnberry last weekend, lasses. Back to you, Carlos.
Yes, and we had more action there, too, I mean, in the world and the major tours. And we're going to start now with the European Tour. There were two tournaments there. One was the initial Saltire Energy Polari match play where Thailand's Kiradesh Afibarnred held off Sweden's Robert Karlsson to win it at Molkar Links in Aberdeen. He was 3-up with 4 to go, but, you know, Karlsson came back, put it all square. But in the last one, Afibarnred made the birdie, and Karlsson didn't, so he won. In another exciting match there for the third-place playoff, it was England's David Howell, who came out on top. He defeated home favorite Mark Warren by one hole. The other tournament there in the European Tour was the Madeira Islands Open, where Rube Kakko earned his first European Tour victory Sunday after shooting a flawless 9-under 63 to win the Madeira Islands Open by three strokes. The 33-year-old Finn made an eagle there and made an eagle to go with 7 birdies for a tournament record of 24-under. Scott Henry of Scotland was the runner-up for a second year in a row. Kakko is only the second Finnish player to win on the European Tour following Mikko Ilonen. On the Champions Tour, the 3M Championship, you know, comfortably in front, Kenny Perry felt uneasy for most of his 18-hole Sunday. Afterward, he couldn't be much happier. He breezed to his second straight victory in this 3M Championship, shooting a 4-under for a four-stroke victory over Bernhard Langer, Scott Dunlop, and Kevin Sutherland. And on the web.com tour, I have to mention this one in the Utah Championship. You know I have checked on Patton Kizzir all year long. He's been leading. He's my guy. And he finally went through. He won the Utah Championship on Sunday for his first.
When we talked about young guys to watch back at the beginning of the year, you said he was a guy to follow, didn't you? That's exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely. There you see him. He's leading the Web.com Tour, and he earned his first Web.com Tour title at the Utah Championship, beating South Korea's another South Korean, man. Wow. Sung Kang with a 3-foot birdie, but on the second play of hole, he closed with a 3-under at Thanksgiving Point. That was the course, so he earned $117,000 to push his tour-leading total to $391,699, giving him a lead of $123,000 over Peter Mamnatty. And finally, on the PGA Tour, the Quick and Sloan National, Troy Merritt claimed his maiden PGA Tour title with a 3-shot victory over his fellow American rookie, American Ricky Fowler, not rookie, Ricky Fowler in the Quick
rookie
and Sloan
Fowler?
National. Ricky Fowler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Ricky Fowler. He's not a rookie. In the Quick Loans National in Virginia, you know, that's not a bad turnaround for a player who had missed 5 cuts in a row coming into that tournament. He took the lead in the event with a fabulous third round of 61, which was a tournament record and a phenomenal effort in testing conditions in Saturday. He went into Sunday 1 shot ahead of Ricky Fowler. On that final day, it was Bill Haas who applied the early pressure. He fired 6 birdies in the first 10 holes to reach 17 under and tie Merritt at the top of the board, but he faded on the back 9 and in the end finished in a tie for 4th. At the end, it was Ricky Fowler who finished at Merritt's closest challenger, but he had a roller coaster final round of 669, which featured 7 birdies and 5 bogeys. And after the round, he went over to give Merritt a hug and congratulate him for his first tour win. Tiger Woods, wow, who we featured last week at the practice range, he basically laughed about critics who tell him he sucks and should retire. He's continually progressing and showing signs of his former self. He missed by inches a hole-in-one on Saturday and made a spectacular recovery on the 12th on Sunday. Tiger is up slightly in the world rankings to number 264 after that tie for 18th finish. He's 60 slots away from making the FedEx Cup. In Tiger Woods' last 2 non-major PGA Tour starts, which is the Greenbrier and the Quicken Loans, he's had 6 of 8 rounds in the 60s. So that is progress, Fred.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Merritt had missed 5 cuts in a row coming into the Quicken. You know, this was just his third top 10 of all of 2015. He's missed 13 cuts in 24 starts this year. He's a 2009 Q School graduate. And of course, this was his first win. He also had one win on the Web.com Tour in 2009 at the Mexico Open. This win moves him inside the top 100, and he's number 38 now on the FedEx Cup standings. Ricky Fowler had another solid week with 4 rounds in the 60s. 4 top 10s this year, plus the win at the Players. He may be the guy to watch at Firestone this week or next week at the PGA and even in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Yeah, you know, Bill Haas really went out fast, but he really made those bogeys on the back that kind of moved him back down there, took him back out of contention. Yeah, good news, bad news for Tiger. Good news, he posted 68-66 over the first 2 rounds to get in contention heading into weekend play, but very untidy 2 over par 74 on Saturday, dropped him like a rock down the leaderboard. You were texting me on Friday night saying, oh, man, he's hot. Look out, he's hot. And what'd I tell you? Wait for the weekend when he gets under pressure, see what happens. You know, that's exactly, you know, he saw the finish line before he was there. And, you know, that's just all part of, you know, we talked about reps and you know, you have to play every round like it's just another round. You can't see the prize at the end of the race. You just have to go literally shot to shot, and he's just not there yet. But, as you mentioned, this performance, along with the 3 rounds at the Greenbrier, definitely his best results this year. You know, he is trending. You know, it's a good sign. So if he will keep playing, if he can continue on this, you know, it's a good thing. He's not in the field this week at WGC. He'll need a miracle at Whistling Straits to get into the FedEx Cup playoffs. His season may be nearing an end. I'm curious to see if he adds the Wyndham by Friday to his schedule. I think he has till Friday at 5:30 to sign up for the Wyndham. I would advise him to do so, but, you know, Tiger hasn't called me and asked me about it yet. He actually hit some really good shots this week. That five wood from Preble and cozied that right up there on the green. I mean, that was Tiger-esque. So, yeah, there's some good signs. You know, he's gaining some confidence back, and so he just needs to keep playing. I feel a lot better about him this week than I did last week, Carlos. Champions Tour, Kenny Perry, we haven't talked about him for a long time. A matter of fact, it was just a year ago when he won the 3M last year. He was a defending champ. The win moves him to number 11 on the Charles Schwab Cup. He beat Bernhard Langer on both occasions, last year and this year. Langer finished runner-up. Langer, you know, he's just having another amazing year on the Champions Tour. 9 top 10s and 13 starts. His last 4 starts, he won the Senior Players, T3 at the U.S. Senior Open, runner-up at the Senior Open, and then runner-up this week in Minnesota. And that's pretty strong. He jumps around Monty for the lead in the Charles Schwab Cup. He might be peaking at just the right time of the year to win that Charles Schwab Cup. Arnold Palmer was supposed to be on hand for the Legends portion of the 3M, but decided he needed to stay home and rest after his time in Europe last week. That evidently just drained him a little bit, traveling like that. The Legends match, Nicklaus, Player, Trevino, Weisskopf, Onaga, all the great retired players that were there. It's fun stuff to watch at the 3M every year. That's a good deal. Too bad they don't have more of those kind of things. Lee Trevino was great. The Saltire Energy Paul Laurie's match play, Thailand's Kiradesh Afibanrat got his third European Tour win, second win this season by defeating Robert Carlson in the final match. It was held at the Murkar Golf Links in Aberdeen, Scotland. Along the way, he defeated Wade Ormsby, Graham Storm, Thomas Aiken, Michael Hoy, Mark Warren, and then Carlson in the finals. Big win for the big guy from Thailand. As you mentioned, Madeira, that was a second event on the European Tour this week. Rupi Kako became the second finish winner in European Tour history, winning there at the Madeira Islands Open. He's played on the Challenge Tour since 2004, had 2 wins there, has played in a handful of events over the years on the European Tour, but now has a new 2-year exemption and full membership to the big tour. He said he was at a stage where he really needed to win, and he was really nervous, but, you know, he did get calmed down when the pressure was on and got it done, so good for him. And we talked about Patton Kazir, Auburn grad, wins the Utah Championship, presented by Zions Bank. He was number 1 on the web.com money list despite not having a victory. Now he even just increases his lead a little bit. So he's pretty much a lock for his tour card for next year. He's had 3 top 10 finishes, including a playoff loss to Kyle Thompson at the Rex Hospital Open. And he got that win, 19 under par, defeating Sun Kang with a birdie on the second playoff hole. So congrats to him, Carlos. That wraps up the backspin for tonight.
And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, I don't remember when was the last time we didn't talk about Donald Trump in the Par 5 News, so I think if we keep this going, we're going to have to name a subsection for their Donald, because I mean, he's on the news everywhere. We don't want to be left out anyway. So what do you have on the Donald Trump's appearance at Turnberry for us?
Well, you know, he says he's number one in the poll, so, you know, we got to talk about him, you know.
Yeah.
So, and he keeps popping up.
Where are we to question?
Exactly. You know, we're just going with what the public demands. the Rico Women's British Open is played at Donald Trump's Turnberry in Scotland, as everybody knows. Of course, that prompted the required appearance of the presidential candidate. Since Trump's comments about illegal aliens in the U.S., the LPGA, as well as other major golf organizations, have tried to separate themselves from the outspoken Trump. Trump and LPGA Commissioner Michael Wan have even carried on a mild media feud. But with the time too short to change venues, the Women's British was held at Turnberry with only minor inconvenience or distraction from Dear Donald. For the most part, Trump stayed on script, only made a few short political comments, and let his people do most of the talking for him, which is highly unusual. Most of the comments for the media types in attendance came from Trump's son, Eric, who had a microphone thrust in his face. Eric said his father loves America, would make a great president, and about being Trump's child, he said his father made him work for any money he had. Trump has also been carrying on a feud of sorts with Band and Dunes creator Mike Kaiser. Trump told Lynx magazine, "You know, everyone crows about Band and Dunes. Well, I've been to Band and Dunes. The views there are no better than what we have, and the dunes themselves are like little toys compared to our dunes." In another interview with Golf Digest, talking about Band and Dunes, Trump said, "The biggest dune at Band and Dunes is like one-tenth the size of our smallest dune. It's a toy, and they get such great reviews. Every one of my courses is, like, amazing." Sounds to me like Donald has some dune envy going on there. Well, anyway, all Mike Kaiser had to say about this whole Trump thing is, for all that blunder, he thinks Trump is good for the game. He gets people talking about golf, which is a good thing, since the activity is waning in popularity among younger people. As far as addressing Trump directly, Kaiser said, "You won't find any water fountains at Band and Dunes." And that's all he had to say on it, Carlos. So Trump always makes the news. We always got to have a little Trump piece in there. And we did that just for Kieran, because I know Kieran loves Donald so much.
You know, we're hoping we're going to have Kieran next week, so hopefully he's listening, and I just can't wait to see.
We'll let him do the trunk segment next week.
Yeah. So, Kieran, from now on, you know, until next Tuesday, monitor the news, get up to date with Donald. We know that every day you're watching his news, so anyway, you're going to be talking about him next week. But anyway, continuing on, and talking about Europe, you know, the European Tour, Chief Executive Dirk O'Grady, he has officially stepped down after 10 years at the helm of the European Tour, saying it was a good time to leave after another overwhelming Ryder Cup success and enough green shots of recovery across the tour. Yesterday, 51-year-old Canadian Keith Pelley, he began his tenure as Chief Executive of the European Tour, bringing not only his extensive business pedigree across the Atlantic, but also his in-depth knowledge of professional sports and media, having worked across both industries for the past 30 years. He definitely is battle-tested, and his resume impeccable. So as he sits down on the chair at his office at the European Tour headquarters on the affluent Wentworth Estate in Virginia Water in Surrey, I'd like to find out what tops his to-do list. It's bound to be a long list. But let's get one thing straight first. You know, the European Tour is a good tour. You have only to look at the facts to reach that conclusion. Seven European victories in the last nine Ryder Cups, a conveyor belt of major winners stretching from Seve Ballesteros to Rory McIlroy, the succession of world number one players, including the aforementioned gentleman, a host of players in the world top 50, a 49-tournament schedule worth $185 million, good young players running their stuff on the world stage, a strong challenge tour producing future talent, and an excellent field staff that stages and runs tournaments well. All of the above is a credit to the work of Pelly's predecessors, John Jacobs, Ken Schofield, and George O'Grady. Jacobs was the man responsible for breaking free of the shackles of the British PGA. Schofield had the vision to build a circuit that helped Ballesteros, Sir Nick Faldo, Bernhard Langer, Sandy Lyle, Ian Wisnam, and Jose Maria Olazabal become major winners and household names. Schofield was also responsible for taking the circuit outside its traditional geographic boundaries to break new ground in the far corners of the globe. O'Grady, he managed to continue that trend and steer the tour through the worldwide financial crisis. So what's in store for Pelly? He will have to put all his efforts on getting Europe's top stars to play more in Europe. Focus on the immediate threat of a continued young and developing talent drain to the PGA Tour. Take, for example, Danny Willett, Andy Sullivan, and Tommy Fleetwood could certainly be looking to follow in the footsteps of older peers and eventually base themselves in the U.S. Also, despite the $185 million schedule, there are too many long stretches of the Euro Tour calendar with low-purse tournament that is not good enough to entice the Tier 1 stars to come back and play home. And also, why is it that the European Tour only makes money on Ryder Cup's years and runs a deficit every other year? That's clearly not good enough. So, Fred, maybe his first piece of business will be to look at who's working underneath him and ask him why many have been underperforming for far too long. So roll up your sleeves, Mr. Pelly. You've got a big job ahead of you.
Yeah, you know what? You are right on the money with that. The European Tour has really become a minor league for the PGA Tour. Even though they win the stupid Ryder Cup every time, I don't know that.
Because we're losing, right?
You would think the economy would be such in Europe that they could find some Fortune 500 companies to up the purses and things. And I don't know if they don't have the TV presence in Europe or what the problem is there. But, yeah, he's definitely got to deal with that. And you know, they travel around the world so much. I mean, the LPGA Tour is getting it done. Why can't the European Tour do it? I don't know. That's a good question. Justin Rose and Dustin Johnson are heading to Hong Kong, Carlos. The Hong Kong Open has been around since 1959 and became a sanctioned event on the European Tour in 2001. Past winners include Greg Norman, Frank Nabilo, Tom Watson, Padraig Harrington, Colin Montgomery, Rory McIlroy, and Miguel Angel Jimenez has won it four times. The tournament was in financial trouble and searching for a deep-pocket sponsor. They found it with UBS, and they raised the purse from $1.3 million to $2 million this year. UBS had previously sponsored the event from 2005 to 2012 and will return as the named sponsor for the 2015 tournament. This is the largest sporting event held in Hong Kong every year and allows the world to see the wonder of one of the busiest cities in the world. They also put enough money in the till to pay some tasty appearance fees to get a couple of the biggest names in the game to show up October 22nd through the 25th. Justin Johnson announced this week that they will add the UBS Hong Kong Open to their schedules for later this year. Dustin Johnson was quoted, "You look at some of the names who have won the tournament, you realize there's a great history there. Those are the kind of trophies you want to get your name on. As golfers, we are lucky to have the chance to travel the world playing the game we love, and when you get the chance to visit cities as exciting as Hong Kong, then it's difficult to say no." Rose, who finished tied for second at the U.S. Masters and joint sixth at the British Open earlier this month, said he was looking forward to returning to Fanling's tight, tree-lined course that fits well into his calendar this year. "I like the idea of putting another tournament on the schedule near the end of the year to give myself as good a chance as possible of winning the Race to Dubai. I missed the cut by a shot in 2011, but I loved the golf course. With some new money injected in the Hong Kong Open and the appearance of Rose and Johnson, it should add a little excitement to the tournament, and there's a little boost for the European Tour at the end of the year, Carlos."
Oh, so Keith Pelly could have something there to work on, so we'll see. But anyway, it's good to see them going there to Hong Kong and play. Good, you know, good for the publicity and all that. They need those big-time players to go there and come forth. So Hey, I have something to talk about. Golf's power couple. Yeah, too bad there's no such thing as a national championship tournament in professional golf for married couples. Because, you know, Martin and Jirena Pillar of Fort Worth, Texas would be prohibitive favorites, provided they could find their time on their crowded schedules to actually see each other. They married in January of 2011, and the Pillars are professional golf's power couple. Martin plays on the Web.com Tour, which was visiting Utah this past weekend for the Utah Championship at the Thanksgiving Point Golf Club, while Jirena is an LPGA star, you know, who was tied for second place 2 weeks ago at the Major Class LPGA Classic in Michigan by firing a closing round 64. Chasing their careers and that little white golf ball around the globe means that the Pillars often go 3 to 4 weeks or longer during the season without seeing each other. They spent 142 days away from each other the first year of marriage. And quite likely, they will break that record this year because Martin, his win 3 weeks ago at the Albertsons Boise Open, virtually guarantees him a spot on the PGA Tour, which now starts its new season in October. Martin also called himself extremely blessed and noted several times at Thanksgiving Point Clubhouse that his love and admiration for his wife has nothing to do with her prowess on the golf course and everything to do with what a wonderful, caring, and thoughtful person she is. Now, when he was asked about being golf's power couple, he laughed and he said, you know, as long as we're a couple in anything, that's good by me. Both were grinding away on the mini tour circuit when they met in November of 2009. Now, Jirena was in Scotland this past weekend playing at the Women's British Open, while Martin, still looking to improve upon his number 5 ranking on the Web.com Tour money list, and the future is looking bright for both. Oddly, the sport most responsible for bringing the rising golf stars together back in November 2009, no, it wasn't golf. It was NASCAR. Some pit crew members invited Jirena and Martin separately to play golf with them while the stock car racing circuit was in the Dallas area, and the UTEP, where Jirena studied, and Texas A&M, where Martin studied, the graduates happened to be put in the same golf cart. Jirena told the Dallas Morning News that she was reluctant to give Martin her phone number because he was probably the most annoying person I've ever met. But eventually, she did, and they were married 14 months later. And Martin acknowledges that maybe he was a bit too confident about his golfing ability back then, maybe trying to show off a bit too much. You know, so when they are together, the Pillars rarely talk shop. When they are both playing, Martin said both will check their phones frequently to see how their spouse is playing, but never during a round. When they play together at home in Fort Worth, they never compete against each other, compare scores or drives, make bets, or the like. Jirena is known as one of the longest hitters in the LPGA. But hey, there's one little competition going on. However, the former Jirena Mendoza took Martin's last name when they were married, but friends have joked and teased them that the other spouse who has to change his or her last name when one of them gets the first win on a major tour. However, Fred, Martin is more jealous about another perk that has come with Jirena's success. She already has been asked to throw out the first pitch at Major League Baseball games for Phillies, Rangers, and the White Sox. So I don't know, but I think he has been scared a couple of times when Jirena has been close to winning on the LPGA.
They put new meaning to the old saying, absence makes the heart grow fonder, right, Carlos?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, couples that are apart like that, they can't fight. So, you know, when you get together, you know, there you go. Hey, Jeff Shackelford posted an article he found in the New York Times about a golf course owned by the city of East Orange in New Jersey. As with most municipal-owned golf courses, today the East Orange golf course found itself in disrepair and hemorrhaging money to the tune of $372,000 a year. The mayor didn't see a problem. He saw an opportunity. If you wanted a cold beer or something to eat, guess what? You couldn't get it there. It was so run down. The mayor, Lester E. Taylor, had run on a ticket of bringing fiscal viability and running city government more like a business, so he had to address the casual management of a golf course. So just as the 2014 golf season was beginning, the mayor called a timeout on the golf course. He and the city council abruptly closed it, naturally leading to speculation that the city planned to sell the property in one of the country's most exclusive zip codes. But East Orange had other plans. The city applied for and received state authorization for $6 million in bond financing to renovate the course and replace the clubhouse and restaurant. It hired Stephen Kay, a well-known golf course architect, to oversee the makeover, and Juan Cassiano to serve as the on-site superintendent, all of which provided a more professional golf sensibility. The golf course is closed for now, but Mr. Cassiano promises in a year from now the greens will be tight, the fairways true, and the new clubhouse restaurant stocked with food and drinks. Rather than just close an iconic old city-owned golf course, a city government has the courage to put money into a property that is probably more valuable being sold off for more strip malls and condos, and they are investing in the future for the city of East Orange, for the enjoyment of its citizens, with improving the golf course as it was originally meant to be. My hat's off to them, Carlos. And that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of products: Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Matter of fact, they have a hot deal on a Nike wind jacket right now. If you go on there, you can get that thing for $44.95. It's a heck of a deal. Really nice jacket. I've got one. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, they offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. Maybe guys may want to go on there, check that out, sign up. Just the savings alone, if you're doing any golf travel, it's well worth it. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discount travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Also, you're involved, your membership in My Golf in the U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. Plus, they have for sale by owner on site. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, we have our very important VIG guest of the week, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Jason Becker. He's the president of the PGA Tour's Golf Membership Consultants. He has 10 years of experience as a PGA of America golf professional in South Florida. He shares his knowledge of the local golf industry with avid golfers from other areas of the United States who are eager to play in beautiful Southwest Florida. His goal is to educate as many current and future retirees as possible regarding the membership options that best suit them given the importance of this financial decision. Fred, set us up. What about this interview with Jason Becker?
Yeah, I was introduced to Jason of Golf Life Navigators and really intrigued with his idea. He helps retiring golfers here in the North who, you know, want to move to a southern, more temperate climate, and especially in Florida, where there's over 1,200 private golf courses or clubs that, you know, someone can get into. He helps match people up with the right ones. Also, he helps with their real estate purchase or condo leasing or whatever they're working to do, what area they want to get to. you know, do they want to be by the beach? Do they want to be inland? Do they want to be in a secure community? Whatever it may be, he helps with that. And he works through the clubs and different properties up north here to do that. So, you know, with over 100,000 retirees moving to Florida every year, there's a real need for this service, because for a guy to go down and check these places out, it's just impossible. There's no way you can see them all. So, you know, they can get the criteria and go through it and really help them out. So, had a chance to talk to him and tape this interview with him, Carlos.
Let's play it.
We are talking today with Jason Becker, who is the president of Golf Life Navigators. And he's come up with kind of a unique idea for golfers who are nearing retirement, maybe looking for a club to join. They're going to be relocating from a colder climate to a warmer climate. And anyhow, Jason, welcome to the show, to the Back Nine Report. We're happy to be talking with you today.
Thanks, Fred. Happy to be here.
Hey, you have a background in golf. I believe you're a Class A PGA professional. What have you been doing? Where have you been working?
Yes, I am. I started in the PGA world in 2003, moved down from Michigan to Naples, and fell in love with the industry and got my Class A card in 2009, and have been a club pro at a couple different facilities, one in Naples, a golf club at the Everglades, and then was the head golf professional at the Boca Raton Resort on the east coast of Florida in Boca.
Well, tell us a little bit about Golf Life Navigators. What is that all about?
Well, we put together a program that would help folks that are moving down to South Florida or the state of Florida, in that matter, filter through the 1,200 options. So there's 1,200 club communities within the state, and we would listen to them, interview them, try to figure out what exactly they're looking for and wanted, and then help them navigate through all of those options and get in the right direction. There's so much out there to see and to feel. One would spend hours investigating it on their own and trying to go, you know, place to place to find the right spot. And so our PGA staff are spaced around the state of Florida. So when someone is looking for a certain sector of the area, we would have that PGA professional do the consultation and give us our feedback on where it would be a good place for someone to join for a membership or to purchase real estate.
So I'm here in the northern United States, Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, maybe New York. I'm working. I'm in my 50s, and I'm thinking about retirement. I want to go someplace where it's warm and there's nice golf courses and sunny beaches. And so I would contact you, and you would help set me up with the right club for me.
Yeah, basically we would set up a consultation where you and your wife would be there. We would go through a number of questions that they're fun to talk about. You know, how many days do you envision playing golf when you're down here? Are you bocce players or tennis? Your dining habits, those types of things. And we really go to work at that point from our local knowledge. And we have a database system with all of the different club information, so we can give you a good idea of what the local market is doing, what a initiation might cost at a certain facility. And then really, once you're ready, we'll put together a detailed report and a strategic plan so you can fly down with your wife, play these 3 or 4 properties, and enjoy the area as opposed to running around trying to figure out where to go next, and really expedite the entire process for you.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. It sounds very specific, very a niche kind of a market. How did you come up with this idea for a business in the first place?
Well, it actually kind of stumbled upon it. In grad school, I'm studying adult education and how adults think, and was doing a number of projects and reports on teaching adults the golf swing. And my professors were tired of reading about it, quite honestly, and so they asked me to investigate and research something else. And so I wanted to keep it within the golf industry. And I, being a club pro for a number of years, I thought, well, I've seen members come down, and I know that 1,000 people a day move to Florida, and I believe 10,000 people a day turn 65, and people are coming. How are they filtering all these options? In Southwest Florida alone, we have 165 clubs. And so I just reached out to some colleagues of mine up north who are head pros, and they put me in touch with some members that were close to the transition. and interview these folks to find out how they were filtering all the options. And as it turned out, they really didn't have a system. Everyone was kind of just trying to figure it out on their own. They had the internet to rely on and friends of friends. And for the most part, you know, the internet was so daunting, you could spend forever trying to research, you know, different properties and whatnot on there and not really get a good feel for them. And then the friends component was okay for some, but for most people, they wanted to maybe be in a different community than their friends from up north. And they wanted a little bit less or a little bit more, needed to be closer to an airport or closer to dining and the ocean. So with all those factors involved, it really kind of turned into a business. I was able to ask these folks very specific questions, and I was going through the process in my head filtering for them because I've lived in the Southwest side for 15 years. And when I would go through the consultation with these case studies, I suggested three or four clubs I thought would be a perfect fit, and none of the 12 case studies had heard of the clubs I was suggesting. And so that's when I knew I had something that was much, much needed out there. It was a void that needed to be filled.
Yeah, you give some numbers. There's 100,000 new people retiring to Florida every year. There's over 10,000 people that turn 65 every day.
For 8 years.
Baby boom. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And you've got over 1,200 golf courses in Florida to choose from. So putting these people together with the right facility is kind of a daunting task. You do need a little bit of information for that.
Well, yeah, and there's the 1,200 golf communities, and you have thousands of real estate possibilities. So what we had learned is that there was a bigger need. It was just the golf, helping find the right golf club was one thing, but can we parlay that search for the real estate as well? And so we brought in some folks that were experts in those industries, and we do that. We do a separate needs analysis for someone during consultation, and then that way when they come down here on their trip, visit three or four clubs that meet their criteria, and then visit three or four homes or properties that, you know, in and around at the time that they're at those clubs, so they can really expedite the process. So, yeah, we have a lot of testimonials from clients that have come and gone through the system that are just so thankful because they were able to save a lot of time and daunting research trying to figure it all out on their own.
Well, you certainly are helping fill the need of baby boomers across the country. You know, as we know, we're all living a little bit longer. A lot of us are turning into our mid-60s, and we're looking for a way to enjoy our retirement in sunny Florida and hopefully on a golf course. So Golf Life Navigators can help fill that part of the American dream, and you can get a hold of Jason in a couple ways. Number one, right now, the website is golfmemberpro.com, which he has a new website under construction, will be coming up sometime in the near future. But more importantly, maybe you could reach him with the phone number of toll-free call 855-633-8462. Again, phone number, call Jason at 855-633-8462. He can put you into his program. There is no fee for this service, by the way. Is that correct, Jason?
Correct. No, it's complimentary. We built other revenue-generating structures so that way this could be free for the consumer, and they would not have to worry about spending additional dollars and before they make one of the biggest buying decisions of their lives. So we wanted to make sure we were accompanying them for that.
Well, it has been a pleasure talking to you today, Jason. I think you have a great idea for a product here, and I hope some of our listeners will be in contact with you.
Yep. Thank you, sir.
That was the interview with Jason Becker. And Fred, definitely, what a great idea. I mean, and the special thing about it, like you all heard, is free. So what are you waiting for? Start calling. You got all the information there. So, Fred, some final notes on it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a free service. And, you can get it hooked up through your local golf pro. You can give Jason a call. People can contact us. We'll put them in contact with Jason. They're doing it in Florida right now. He's in the process of expanding to Texas, Arizona, California. He's meeting with some people to grow the business quite a bit over the next several months. So really going fast for him, and it looks like it's a really, really cool thing, especially for golfers who are in their 50s and thinking about maybe going someplace else when they retire.
So there you have it. Call us or call him. We'll put you in contact with him. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to take the practice range. There's only three more weekends to play in the regular season of the PGA Tour. We're going to take you in an in-depth preview of this weekend's WGC Bridgestone and what's going on with who's going to miss the FedEx Cup playoffs. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, take our shots at it, and that's why we go to the practice range. This week, you know, there's only 3 weeks left on the PGA Tour regular season. It has four tournaments left, the WGC Bridgestone and the Barracuda this weekend, then the PGA Championship and the Wyndham Championship, all that before the FedEx Cup playoffs. You know, for those outside the top 125 in the standings, it is now or never to make up the points needed to get into the field at the Barclays in New York. Ryo Ishikawa and Brian Stewart are currently 125 and 126 in the FedEx Cup standings with 421 points. You know, Jason Duffner occupies the 100th spot, which is transfer line to the Deutsche Bank with 526 points. With three tournaments remaining for players to collect points, there will be plenty of shuffling of those standings. The good news for those that need to move up or those that just want to solidify their standing is that two of the remaining events have higher point payouts than a normal tournament. The standard PGA Tour event gives the winner 500 points, but the WGC Bridgestone has 550 points and the PGA Championship 600 points. They offer more, so there are better chances to jump in the standings. Here are some of the biggest names on the PGA Tour that are either in the bubble or have to work, or have some work to do in order to make it to the field at the Barclays and beyond. So on the bubble, we have to talk about Ryo Ishikawa. He has 421 points. He's currently on the field, but Ishikawa will want to improve his ranking in the next two events, the Barracuda Championship this week and the PGA Championship the next weekend. The Barracuda is a split field, so it gives out fewer points, 300 to the winner, but he can still improve his standing. The 124th is Vijay Singh, who has 422 points. He has only one PGA Championship left. I mean, only the PGA Championship left, so whether he makes it in or not will be totally depending on his performance there at Whitland Straits. And 114th is Lee Westwood with 453 points. He's in the Barclays field at the moment, but if he wants to make a deeper run in the playoffs, he needs to play well at the WGC and the PGA Championship to improve his standing. 93 is Adam Scott. Well, he's in danger of missing the playoffs, or even the Deutsche Bank, really. However, he's the world's number 11 ranked golfer, but he needs to make up some serious ground if he wants to get into the top 30 for a chance to play at the Tour Championship at Atlanta. He will be playing the Bridgestone and the PGA Championship, but he needs to start chipping away at the 469-point difference between him and Louis Heisen, who's number 30th. Now, big names outside. Let's start with Luke Donald at 127. The former world number one has had an up-and-down season, and he's just barely outside the cut to make the field at the Barclays. He's only 6 points back of Ishikawa, and a strong performance by Donald at the PGA Championship could be enough to solidify his spots on the playoffs. 138 is Charles Schwartzel. He has 53 points to make up on the 125th place, but with a spot on the field at the WGC Bridgestone and the PGA Championship next week, he has two excellent opportunities to grab points. Top 10 at either event would give him enough points to get inside the top 125. Graham McDowell is 159. He needs to put in a lot of work in the next 2 weeks to put himself in position to make the Barclays Field. However, like Schwartzel, he does have a spot in the next two tournaments, the WGC and the PGA Championship, so he has opportunities to grab those points. Martin Kaymer, he's a surprise because he's 19 on the official World Golf Rankings, but he's the highest-ranking player in the world that isn't in the FedEx Cup playoffs. He's number 165. He also has spots in those two big tournaments, so he could make a charge. Ernie Els is 176. The Big Easy only remaining tournament on the schedule is the PGA Championship. So barring a Chuck win or top three performance, he will miss out. And finally, I have to talk about Tiger Woods. Hey, the good news, he jumped up 12 spots from last week. The bad news, he still has 60 more to go. He's not only away behind in points, but he won't have an opportunity to make up any ground this weekend, and he's not on the field at the Bridgestone or the split field at Barracuda. Like Els, he needed a miraculous performance at the PGA in 2 weeks to have a chance. He said this week that a good showing at the PGA Championship could mean he plays in the Wyndham the following week. So we'll see. He'll take his word at it. But Fred, this weekend, the WGC Championship, all eyes on Jordan Spieth looking for a win and become the world's number one player. And also, I would be looking forward to see, you know, Jason Day and Ricky Fowler. What is different with them? I would say the confidence, and what a great tournament we have in front of us.
Yeah, the next 2 weeks, really good stuff. You've got the best players playing in big tournaments. So just a little bit about the Bridgestone. You've got all the members of the 2014 U.S. and European Ryder Cup teams in the field. You got the top 50 players on the official world golf ranking in the field. You got tournament winners whose victories were considered official tournaments on any of the major tours. And then you've got some winners of some other tournaments like from the Japan Golf Tour and the Australasian Tour and, you know, an Asian Tour and a couple different things. So it's the best of the – only the best of the best that's playing this week. It's a $9.25 million purse, $1.57 million going to the winner. Excuse me. No cut this week, so everybody gets a check. Defending champion Roy McIlroy, not playing, sitting at home with his foot up. And, of course, they're playing at historic Firestone Country Club in Akron. Where, Carlos? Ohio. That's right. Right here in the center of the golf universe. Hey, surprises. Jordan Spieth will be making his second start at the Bridgestone and his eighth career World Golf Championship start. With a victory, as you mentioned, this week, he could take over the top spot in the official world golf ranking at the same event in which Rory McIlroy became number one in the world with a victory last year. Spieth's incredible season means an equally incredible lead in the FedEx Cup standings with 3,763 points, which is nearly double his closest competitor, Bubba Watson, who has 2,043. Rory, will he be back for the PGA or the playoffs? Questionable. Don't know. A lot of rumors circulating around whether he's going to play a practice round next weekend or not at Whistling Straits. We'll see. I had reports today that he's been seen hobbling around Ireland, walking around a little bit, walking the streets. So maybe he's going to be healthy enough to jet over and play a few rounds. You mentioned Jason Day and Ricky Fowler. They have come in here as big favorites, along with Dustin Johnson. These got to be the guys that you got to look for to really do well this week, along with Jordan. And as you mentioned, it's really important for some of these guys the next couple weeks to try and get their way into the FedEx Cup playoffs. That is so big. The money is just so huge. We'll talk about that in another week or so, how much they're playing for. But let's just say it's a lot of money. And that's what these guys are playing for, you know, after all. It's all about the money. You know, the first name on the list, of course, as you mentioned, Tiger Woods. I mean, he's got to do something pretty much miraculous to get in. He's got to finish top 10 next week in the PGA or maybe win, and then finish high again the following week at the at the Wyndham. You know, you just don't really see guys come up from 185 unless they happen to jump up and get a win. Graham McDowell, even at 159, Keimer and Els, I mean, they're kind of far back unless they have two really good weeks. So, you know, usually, I mean, we've watched this every year now, and we see, you know, guys that are usually, if you're around 120 at this point here, you can be pretty safe that you're going to be in. You know, only about two or three guys end up changing place in this thing. So the guy at 125, Ryo Ishikawa, 124 is Vijay Singh. You got S.J. Park at 123 and Jamie Donaldson at 122. So I would say of those four guys, they probably ought to try and get a pretty high finish here the next couple weeks because they're on the bubble. Those are the guys that have to worry. Luke Donald, if he would have just a couple really good finishes or one, he would jump up and get himself in there. You got Charles Schwartzel, Sam Saunders. I talked to him a little bit last week, talked about him. Billy Hurley is in the mix. Michael Putnam, some really good names that are just outside looking in. If they could just have a couple high finishes or one high finish, that will punch their ticket into the FedEx Cup playoff. Just to give a mention here real quick, the top 10 in the FedEx Cup playoffs right now. You've got Jordan Spieth, Bubba Watson, Jimmy Walker, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Robert Streb, Zach Johnson, Roy McIlroy, Patrick Reed, and Charlie Hoffman. So, Carlos, it's that time of year when some guys are kind of worried about their jobs a little bit for next year. Some of the veterans will have some status. They'll be able to get some tournaments next year, but you're going to have the next 75, 126, through 200 that are going to bounce down and play in the Web.com Tour Final Series along with the top 75 on the Web.com Tour over those last four tournaments coming up here in a couple weeks. So a lot of stuff happening, a lot of stuff to watch for in these tournaments. Some of these guys are close to the 125, Carlos.
You know, in those famous words from Michael Buffer, let's get ready to rumble. That's what's going to happen this thing.
Let's get ready to rumble.
So it's going to be interesting to watch how they battle those guys on the bubble inside and out. So we'll see. Hey, that wraps up the practice range. We're going to take our last break. When we come back, we have the final patch and our goodbye for today. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for a final pass. But before I go, I have here two notes that I wanted to say to Fred. You know, Fred, you sounded like Donald Trump there when you said it's all about the money once there. So, and about Tiger looking for some miraculous thing, I would say, you know, it might be Tiger-esque what he has to do. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Exactly.
But anyway, another final putts. I'm going to take the first ones. And, you know, Western New York native Kevin Price, an Orchard Park high grad who is a producer and Web.com Tour reporter for PGAtour.com, broke the news that the Web.com Tour keeps growing as they announced they will return to Western New York in 2016. The tournament will be the Lecom Health Challenge to be played in Clymer on Peak and Peaks Upper Course on July 4th to the 10th, 2016. It will be the first year in what is a four-year agreement between Lecom and the Web.com Tour to hold the event at Peak and Peak. Now, let's talk a little bit about Europe. You know, confirmation of 2019 as the return of the Open Port Rush for the first time since 1951 is expected by the end of the summer. But the RNA's underwriting of the course and infrastructure overhaul, which is likely to cost between 5 to 7 million sterling pounds, signals that the custodians of the game on that side of the Atlantic are in for the long haul. For those looking for a currency converter, don't worry, I did the homework for you. That is between $7.78 and $10.9 million. That would be great news for Port Rush and the neighboring countries, communities, and for golf on the island of Ireland. The estimated financial benefit of staging the Open is 70 sterling pounds, 70 million. Again, the conversion there is $108.98 million. A successful staging in 2019 would confirm Royal Port Rush on the Rota at intervals of 8 to 10 years, thus guaranteeing regular multi-millions of revenues. And finally, hey, income at St. Andrew's Links Trust, the charity that runs the seven courses at the Home of Golf, topped the 20 million pounds or $31.14 million for the first time last year. Strong numbers of visitor golfers wanting to play the old course, which this year cost up to 170 pounds or $264.66 around, and six other courses was again the main reasons for the 5.6% rise in cash, coming in at almost 20.3 pounds, million pounds, and this is my last conversion, that's $31.6 million. A total of 232,172 rounds of golf were played there on the six 18-hole courses, an increase of 14.7% in 5 years. Last season, the demand to play at St. Andrews surged with the Ryder Cups and Glen Eagles, and also more non-resident yearly tickets were issued, merchandise sales contributed, and catering sales were raised by the opening of the old pavilion. Another source was royalty income from licensing agreements with White House Holdings, who opened a St. Andrews Links Academy, Golf Academy in China. So, Fred, you know, the St. Andrews Link Trust meets the charity test of providing public benefit through the advancement of public participation in the sport. So, more money. It looks like the money, you know, the birthplace of golf, is hearing more and more the sweet sound of ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yeah, Carlos, you're talking about all this big numbers. You're making my head spin here. We get all this talk about golf struggling everywhere, and you're talking about multi-millions of dollars. But, you know, you talk about Royal Port Rush. You know, if they only need $10 million, just ring up Rory, G-Mac, Patty, or Darren Clark, get a little loan from those boys. $10 million, that's just chump change for those guys. Hey, a couple other things real quick. The PGA Tour changes policy for mandatory military service. We're going to have to call that the Sangmun Bay Clause. They made an adjustment to its regulations that will now treat mandatory military service as a medical exemption. So when Sangmun Bay fills his military commitment in Korea, he'll be able to come back and hopefully pick back up where he left off. He's been playing really good the last 2 years, but has to take a break and go work for Korea for a while. Bizarre story about Willard Hurley Jr., who's the father of PGA player Billy Hurley, who had been kind of lost for about a week. He was located when a citizen recognized him from media reports and notified local law enforcement. The story was, I guess, that he was watching his computer in a library in Leesburg, Texas, watching Billy play golf at the Quicken Loans Championship over the weekend, and someone recognized him and called the police. He told them that he did not wish to reveal the reasons behind his departure. He's just out on a little travel vacation, so just let me alone, okay? Is Rory done for 2015? Well, Reuters reported that Rory McIlroy had booked a tee time for a practice round next weekend at Whistling Straits, but Rory's management people say not booked for such a round, still going through the ankle rehab process. But they have not yet confirmed that he is completely out of the final major of the season. He may actually end up going over there. We don't know yet. There's going to be an announcement on Thursday, so we'll find out then. Hey, the last thing I got, and this is a topper, John Daly thinks he would make an excellent Ryder Cup captain. And for sure, Carlos, the evening parties would definitely be better. Hooters could cater the food. You know, it would be a blast. Big John says the Americans take the Ryder Cup way too seriously, need to chill out, and he's just the guy that can make that happen. Can't you just see the stuffed shirts at PGA headquarters jumping up and down in anticipation of John Daly as the Ryder Cup captain? Wouldn't that be great?
No, I think that the dresses, the uniforms, I can't wait to see what they'll be wearing. I mean, multicolor, Hawaiian shirt.
Loudmouth would, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
No Ashworth, any of that other stuff,
No. Hey, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past 70 minutes. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Jason Becker. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.